Our sacred text today is an excerpt from the book What a Mushroom Lives For by Michael J. Hathaway. Fungi deviate from the usual dichotomy of plant and animal. Fungi are the third F, what some people call the funga, alongside flora and fauna. Their ways of living diverge significantly from other organisms. For example, some fungi make symbiotic connections with species in other kingdoms, while others produce a prodigious diversity of sexes. One kind of shelf fungus boasts more than 23,000 mating types, a mind-boggling notion, as many humans still puzzle over reckoning with any more than two genders. Some fungi may have a potentially unlimited lifespan, for they do not possess what scientists call pre-programmed cell death. That is, although they get older, they don't, as we commonly understand it, get old. To acknowledge fungi's seeming strangeness, according to animal and plant logics, can help us queer the field of biology, revealing a radically different view of life. Some scholars of non-humans argue that the concept of agency is too historically burdened and anthropocentric to use beyond a human context, but I contend that the notion of agency has too powerful a grip on the imagination and on the fundamental structure of scientific thought to confine it to humans. That ends our reading. I don't want to live in a world without religion because I cannot imagine a life that does not contain mystery. In fact, the word mystery and the ancient words it came from were used primarily in relationship to religion until the late 14th century and referred to things that were secret or hidden. One religion-related mystery that I have been pondering for over 24 years since I first entered a UU congregation for the first time, is why are we here? Not existentially, as individuals in the universe, but here, part of Unitarian Universalist Church of Belfast, or the five UU congregations I've sojourned with myself, or the many where I've guest preached. Why are we in a religious community? I know the community itself is part of the answer for many, if not most people. I also know people can find a sense of community in many different ways, from choirs to bowling leagues to political movements to book clubs. I also know that for some of us, whether because of trauma or introversion or neurodivergence, being in community can also be quite challenging. Today, when 30% of all adults in our country identify as having no form of religious identity at all, when Unitarian Universalism as a movement contains a uniquely diverse range of beliefs, including some members who claim to have no religious beliefs, why do we still choose to be part of a group who present ourselves to the world as religious community? Why are we here? I have hopped down a few different rabbit holes, theological, sociological, anthropological, looking at how what we call religion today developed in the first place. I find the field of the evolutionary origin of religion fascinating. I'm especially intrigued by a theory from sociologist Jonathan Turner about how evolutionary changes in the brain may have led to religion. He proposes that as the limbic system, one of the oldest parts of the human brain, grew, we were able to move beyond feeling only one emotion at a time, fear or happiness, for example, and became able to combine two or more primary emotions. He believes the emotion that we call awe came to be a combination, by the way, that's A-W-E in case my accent was weird. He believes that the emotion we call awe to be a combination of fear and happiness, that developed as our ancestors evolved from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens. Guilt and shame, two emotions which play a role in some religious beliefs today, are the combination of sadness, fear, and anger in Turner's theory. He believes that group solidarities were made possible by arousal revolving around positive emotions like love, happiness, satisfaction, caring, loyalty, and the mitigation of the power of negative emotions like fear. And that once these new combinations became neurologically possible, they then became entwined with rituals and other emotion-arousing behaviors to enhance group solidarity and eventually produce notions of God and supernatural forces. The idea that emotions, feelings came first, which is also what Eva thought in the story, makes sense to me. Rings true. I believe that spiritual growth and transformation still today require connecting with emotion at least as much as connecting with thinking. And if Turner's theory is correct, a sense of belonging to something greater than oneself came well before our belief in supernatural forces, despite the many faith tradition myths that say God came first. I can understand the development of supernatural beliefs in ancient times because the scientific knowledge of today did not exist, and we have always been inquisitive creatures. John O'Donohue wrote, "When you enter the world, you come to live on the threshold between the visible and invisible. You bring with you a sense of belonging to the invisible that you can never lose or finally cancel. There is always some magnet that draws your eyes to the horizon or invites you to explore behind things and seek out the concealed depths. You know that the real nature of things is hidden." That was the end of the quote. Invisible supernatural forces were a reasonable explanation of existence for our ancient ancestors. As scientific knowledge grew over centuries, many people, including some of our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors, discarded first a few and later more, and sometimes all supernatural concepts. And yet we remain in religious communities. Why are we still here? Primatologist Franz de Waal offers a definition of religion as the shared reference for the supernatural, sacred, or spiritual, as well as the symbols, rituals, and worship that are associated with it. Even if we leave out the word supernatural from that definition, we still do all the rest of it, beginning with the shared nature of the process. So if religion is a normal part of the evolutionary development of our species, and some of us have moved beyond the idea of the supernatural, what might we worship? We could begin with fungi. We would not be here if fungi had never existed. Plants on our Earth only made it out of the water 500 million years ago because they collaborated with fungi, which served as their root system for millions of years until they evolved their own. And 95% of plants today still have a fungal connection. In his book, Entangled Life, How Fungi Make Our Worlds, Change Our Minds, and Shape Our Future, biologist Merlin Sheldrake describes a life form called prototaxites that were present 400 million years ago. Try to imagine a landscape where plants existed, but none of them were more than 3 feet tall. That's even shorter than me. There were no animals with backbones on dry land. Prototaxites were living spires scattered across the landscape, many of them more than 20 feet tall. Small insects made their homes in the giant trunks, chewing out rooms and corridors. Those spires are believed to have been fungi and were the largest living structures on dry land for at least 40 million years. Fungi are still here, eating rock, making soil, digesting pollutants, surviving in outer space, inducing visions, and affecting the composition of the Earth's atmosphere, not just influencing the world, but making the world. That list sounds not unlike ways that some people still view the influence of a supernatural deity. And over 90% of the fungi species remain undocumented, so they are also still mysterious. Then along came lichens. Lichens cover as much as 8% of the Earth's surface, more than is covered by tropical rainforests. When volcanic islands rise from the ocean or glaciers melt to reveal bare rock, lichens are the first organism to establish themselves, sometimes almost immediately. They mine minerals from rock by first breaking the surface and then using acids and mineral binding compounds to dissolve and digest the rock. When lichens die and decompose, they give rise to the first soils in a new ecosystem. A portion of the minerals in all our bodies is likely to have passed through a lichen at some point. They were long thought to be autonomous individual organisms. It was only in the late 1800s that botanist Simon Schwendener proposed that lichens are not a single organism, but a symbiotic union of a fungus and an alga. A fungus cannot photosynthesize by itself, but the fungus in a lichen offers physical protection and acquires nutrients for both members of the union. An alga cannot grow tough layers of protective tissue, but the algal partner can harvest light and carbon dioxide to make sugars that provide energy for both. Fungi and algae sometimes come together incredibly easily. Many types of free-living fungi and algae placed in proximity to one another for only a few days will develop together in a mutually beneficial symbiosis. The critical, the absolute necessary condition for that development being that each partner has to be able to do something that the other could not achieve on their own. Lichens are networks of relationship, verbs as well as nouns. They never stop lichenizing. We are also like lichens. Humans in modern Western societies have taken for granted that they understand where one individual ends and the rest of the world begins. But the way we understand microbes has expanded in recent decades. We are actually ecosystems composed of an ecology of microbes. We now know that we each carry around more microbes than we carry of our own cells. The 40-odd trillion microbes that live in and on our bodies allow us to digest food and produce key minerals that nourish us. They protect us from disease, guide the development of our bodies and immune systems, and influence our behavior. All life forms, including us, are processes rather than things. We have never been individuals. We could not exist in that way. We are all like lichens in a constant process of interdependence. We have knowledge that our ancestors never imagined, and there is much we don't know, and we have no idea of how much we don't know. In 2016, lichenologist Toby Spribble accidentally discovered a previously undetected fungal participant in one of the most studied evolutionary family trees of lichens and has not yet fully figured out what it might mean. We are still drawn to mystery. If our purpose for being in religious community is to worship those forces that which created us, we might want to include some fungi and algae alongside our chalice to represent entities that we know led to our very existence. They might even be interpreted as the origins of our faith. But I don't think that worship of the forces that created us is our only purpose. In response to my earlier question, my best answer for now to why are we still here has two parts. First, because we are not individuals, but interconnected processes, then collective liberation, which is not about individuals, but about everyone, is not just a theory, but our best hope for salvation in a chaotic world. And second, that religious community offers a unique environment to explore mystery, to journey into hidden depths, which can be scary places together. Together, we can form symbiotic relationships where all members are able to do things that other members cannot achieve on their own. And if we can do that within our religious community, built on a foundation of love, there is hope that we can embody this spirit of needing one another and carry the process outward to transform the world. May it be so.